The House passes tax reform. A state study commission makes an alcohol recommendation. That, plus Indiana politicians on Alabama's Roy Moore, and more on Indiana Week in Review, the week ending November 17, 2017.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, the U.S. House approved its version of tax reform legislation, with all seven Indiana Republicans voting in favor, while the state's two Democrats in the House voted no.
The House bill cuts $1.4 trillion in taxes over 10 years. It dramatically reduces the corporate tax rate and draws seven tax brackets down to just four. And it raises the standard deduction while reducing or eliminating several popular deductions, including those for medical bills, student debt, and property taxes. Indiana Republicans who voted in favor of the measure praised it as one that will put more money in Hoosiers' pockets and create more jobs. Democrat Andre Carson says the bill puts large corporations and the 1% above all else. The Senate is working on its own version of tax reform, one whose future is in more doubt, given that chamber's narrow Republican majority.
Is the House bill the kind of tax reform Hoosiers are looking for? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and political analyst John Ketzenberger. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, will House members regret this vote next fall?
Oh, I think they will. I think you're going to have Republicans vote down the line because they say they have to pass something. They don't even care what's in it. You have a 430-page bill that they passed with no hearings. I mean, they're doing so many different things. It's so much of a moving mosaic. But the upshot of this is to give more money to the wealthy. That's what it does. It gives it to the wealthy and to corporations, many of whom are beneficiaries will be foreigners living abroad. So, you look at this and you say you're going to give a couple of crumbs off the table and you're going to say it's middle-class tax reform when the overwhelming majority of these benefits don't go to the middle class. And, in fact, in the Senate version, at least, whatever little tiny benefits the middle class might have go away, and people will be paying more taxes when these expire, whereas the estate tax for $22 million of estate will not go away. It's permanent. The corporation reduction in corporate taxes is permanent. Those things that benefit the wealthy are in there for good, and those things that supposedly benefit the middle class are ephemeral. So I think voters understand what's going on here, and that is it's a power play by the Republicans to give to their wealthy donors and themselves. When Donald Trump stands up there and says he isn't going to benefit, he's lying through his teeth. He absolutely is, because his corporation is exactly one of those pass-through entities, real estate development, that'll now be taxed at 25%. So if you're not working to earn the money, You pay 25% rate. If you're working to earn the money, you can pay a much higher rate.
It seems pretty clear that this is not the final product, of course. We have to see what the Senate decides to do, and then the two will have to somehow become married if this ultimately becomes law. Do you think that members will... Do you think the voters, let me put it that way, do you think the voters will ultimately care what this vote was when there's probably another one coming down the line?
Well, no, they're only going to care I think they're only ultimately going to care about what the final product looks like. If they have more money in their paycheck, they're going to care about that, and it's going to be a positive thing for Republicans going into next year, particularly for households and income earners under $75,000 who do benefit greatly under this bill.
Briefly.
Because Democrats put a rule in place the last time we dealt with expiring tax cuts under George W. Bush that Senate rules require that they expire. Federal law requires that they expire.
Okay, but we're not expiring the ones that repeal the estate tax and give the benefit to the rich, are we?
So in order to simplify, the complex political exercise here is simplification. So they double the standard deduction, and in exchange for that, some popular deductions do go away. That is politically problematic and something that Republicans have to explain. Ultimately, it may improve the bottom line of the middle class. But it's tough to explain to people as you're going through the process. I think the Senate will take more time with this. The bill's on track. I'm interested in what Indiana's third Democrat, Joe Donnelly, does, whether third congressional Democrat.
Should he see the final product before he makes an opinion?
I think he should probably be part of the solution here and get a bill passed.
I want to ask this, though.
Ann talks about tax reform.
Some of these cuts expiring for middle-class or lower-class Americans as they are required by federal law to do. So to that point, does it help Republicans if there are tax cuts initially, even if down the line they might end up paying more? Because when you're voting in 2 years or a year, you don't really care about 7 years after that.
As cynical as it may sound, and I'm not a cynic, but I do think you're onto something there, that we live in this era of short attention spans and, you know, look over here, look over there. No one is, we're almost incapable as a society of looking beyond, you're talking about in 2 years, 5 years, we just don't do that anymore. So I do think because Republicans have put so much, invested so much in the notion of passing tax reform, regardless of, frankly, what it is, there probably would be, through this hard court, full court marketing press that this is all about middle class taxpayers, there probably would be some short term benefit.
But to that point, though, this is one of the key campaign promises for just about every Republican, certainly in the last cycle. We are going to pass tax reform. If there are any measure of cuts in it, then they can say, well, this benefits the middle class, there are cuts from the middle class. Is that really all that matters?
I think that's what matters to the political leadership that's trying to get this bill passed, to try to fulfill what they see as a promise they made to their voters. I have a hard time seeing this bill passing, certainly not in the Senate. The Senate will have a vote on its version sometime soon. It may not pass. I mean, the support for it, we've already seen one senator, Republican senator, say he's not going to support it. They need at least one more to come away, and I think that's going to happen. So I don't think the Senate passes its version of the bill, and so when it gets to a reconciliation, I have a hard time seeing this getting passage unless something dramatic happens, because otherwise they've got a sales job that they can't make. Yes, they're trying to fulfill a promise, but no, this is not a bill that is going to be easily sold, and I don't think the Republicans have shown an ability
exactly
to do
right.
that.
And you know why it's difficult? If a lot of issues, it's either A or B. You're for us or against us. I think you're exactly right for the reason that nobody, might have a faction here that's worried about the property tax deduction and state tax deductions, but you have another faction that's worried about increasing the debt and the impact on the budget. And then you have another group. So, I mean, it's not as if you can just, we got to
please one group.
Please one
or
group, because
if you increase
change
the
it
deficit
here, it messes it up
beyond
there.
Where they're supposed to increase it, it's going to come out of Medicare. Under the Senate version, $100 million in Indiana alone.
Well, that's the point.
On
then
Medicare.
You have critics who would surface based on that.
Well, you've got it across the board on all of these things. But the problem they have with this is they have now injected health care in it as well.
Yeah.
And people are seeing their premiums go through the sky because of the sabotage of the Trump administration on the Affordable Care Act. And they understand that that's sabotaged by the Republicans. And added to that, it's going to dwarf whatever crumbs they get off the table on tax reform.
Do you think injecting, as the Senate has tried to do now, do you think injecting this sort of health care debate into this is probably not the way to move forward?
I think it's going to be really hard to get it out of the Senate. If you include or repeal the individual mandate, Obamacare leans on each other. Each of those pillars of Obamacare lean on one another. Now, ultimately, they may implode on themselves, and they're in the process of doing that. But if you pull out the individual mandate or you pull out just the subsidies, you just one-off reform. You can't reform health care by just taking one card out of the
House of
Cards.
You're one of the few Republicans,
the
though, willing to acknowledge that, because a lot of people say you can take out the owner's portion.
The other three are like moderate United States senators.
All right. The Indiana Study Commission examining the state's alcohol laws recommended this week the legislature legalize Sunday alcohol sales with some limitations.
The proposal would give liquor, grocery, and convenience stores the ability to sell alcohol for carryout between noon and 8 p.m. on Sundays. But the commission opted to hold off on any other recommendations until December. That decision came after lengthy debate over whether to allow grocery and convenience stores to sell cold beer. Commission Chair Beverly Gard says she's unsure how the coal beer debate will play out when the commission finalizes its recommendations next month.
Mike O'Brien, is opening up Sunday sales looking more and more guaranteed next session?
Well, certainly opened up. This alcohol code review commission obviously recommended that alcohol be able to be sold. If you can sell it Monday through Saturday, you can sell it on Sunday from noon to 8 for carryout, which is new. And traditionally what has kept it from passing is it's been leveraged by either the grocery stores, kind of the big box retailers that very much wanted Sunday sales, and the packaged liquor stores that very much did not. And so that was really the crux of the fight. Now, those two groups are the Indiana Retail Council and the Indiana Package...
the Association of Beverage Retailers.
Have teamed up and said, we support this version of Sunday sales, and let's have it.
But leaving cold beer sales out, which is what convenience stores really, really want to fight for.
Yeah, so that's the crux of the alliance, right, of the newfound partnership.
Well, so this is what I want to ask about, too. So these two groups, two of the three, come together and say, oh, yeah, shoulder to shoulder, side by side, we think they should do this. Are they tempting fate by making this sort of bold statement? Well, we've decided that this is what's good, so let's just go ahead with that.
They may be. I mean, certainly having Sunday sales would be a step in the right direction. But I think it's time for the legislature to get out of picking winners and losers in the alcohol sales debate. And that's what they're doing. They're having these groups against each other, and they're raising money from all three of them, and they're not looking at what the consumers want. The consumers clearly want access. Anybody over 21 wants to have access to alcohol when they want it, cold when they want it, however they want it. And we ought to get out of that business, because we have no business regulating it. We really don't. And we don't know how to pick the winners and losers, and we shouldn't be picking the winners
and
losers.
Wow, that's what the Chamber of Commerce believes. So it's Ann Delaney and the Chamber of Commerce, the Retail Council.
Blind hogs and acorns,
I mean,
you know?
Dogs and cats
is right twice a day.
Polls do consistently show that Hoosiers want Sunday sales, they want cold beer where you can buy beer, but they aren't going to the polls with that on their mind. So keeping that part in mind, do you think lawmakers are really being swayed by some polls they see?
No, I don't think so. I think that they understand the issue very well, and they just have decided for a lot of reasons, and we were talking about the factions, you know, the pillars of Obamacare. You have the same kind of a thing here. You have various regulations that if you remove one or change one, it has a profound effect on the others. And what you have is a system that has required liquor stores, for instance, to make heavy investments in those licenses. And they don't want to see those investments diluted by opening that up. That's the difficulty here. Everybody wants to have convenience, but the convenience stores want one thing, others want other things, and they have just not found the magic formula yet, and they just don't seem to be terribly motivated to that yet.
The liquor stores, the Association of Beverage Retailers, the Retail Council have been kind of quietly working on this. This is what we think, you know, this is the best path forward for us, at the expense, it would seem, of the convenience stores. And that had been kind of happening behind the scenes. But to make such a public statement, to come out and tell the whole world, hey, it's us, and we've made this deal, does that run the risk of backfiring? Because now if lawmakers go ahead and do what they might have done anyway, it'll just look like, well, it's because the lobbyists told them to.
And your point is?
Are voters going to be offended by that? And will lawmakers have to have that in the back of their minds when they're casting votes?
Well, they'll be so happy from all the cold beer they're drinking, they won't know the difference. But no, I that may be overthinking it a little bit.
I've been accused of that from time to time.
Classic overthinking.
My sense is that this is the same strategy, perhaps, that you would see with a candidate announcing early that he or she is in this race and already raising money or about to raise big money. You do that because you want to create the perception that this is going to happen. I am the inevitable candidate. Nobody else needs to enter the fray. I'm the guy. And so it seems to me you have a situation here where if you kind of create the notion that this is the solution, this is the workable solution, there's a hope that that gains momentum. I suppose
there's the perception that that's just the way
perception.
It goes.
I think because the strategy, remember, for some sectors here has been it's a four corners offense. We're just going to delay because, and we'll say it's been this way since the 19th.
Right.
But now there's a sense that there will be change. Now it's just trying to figure out
what that change is,
and you want
to
get ahead of the curve.
Let's shrink government. Abolish the Alcoholic Beverage Commission. Period.
Man, you guys are. Did you guys have some kind of brain switch
before
the?
This is going great.
They bought some cold beer on the way.
Yeah, I guess so.
All right, time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question: will the General Assembly approve Sunday alcohol sales and lift cold beer sales restrictions in 2018? A. Yes on Sunday sales, no on cold beer. B. Yes on cold beer, no on Sunday sales. C. Yes on both. Or D. No on both. Last week's question, is Governor Holcomb right to resist any effort to decriminalize marijuana, even for medical reasons? 4% say yes, and 96% say no. If you would like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, Republicans both in Indiana and nationally came out strong against Alabama Senate candidate Roy Moore this week after continued allegations of his inappropriate contact with minors.
Some positive news.
GOP Senator Todd Young began the week calling for Alabama's Roy Moore to step aside in his race for the U.S. Senate. That came after a fifth woman alleged Moore made advances towards her when she was a teenager. Congresswoman Susan Brooks and Congressman Luke Messer also unequivocally called for Moore to abandon his Senate bid. Congressman Todd Rokita qualified his statement that Moore should go if the allegations are true. Meanwhile, Joe Donnelly not only called out Moore, his campaign sent a fundraising email this week for Doug Jones, Moore's Democratic opponent.
John Schwanis, I want to focus first here on Todd Rokita. Does this qualifier, the if the allegations are true, which we've seen some Republicans start to do and then come out later and, well, no, he's got to go. Rokita's stuck with the qualifier so far. Does that cast Todd Rokita in a bit of a negative light?
In whose perception? Now, maybe his district, his reading of his district is that that is a position, and we have heard other staunch supporters, certainly, of Roy Moore, who in the Senate and in the House, who have taken similar sorts of positions. So maybe his calculation is it doesn't hurt him with his core constituency. Now, let me say,
he's got a bigger core constituency to worry about now.
Exactly, and let me just say too, and I may be the naive guy of the year on posters or something, but I, after maybe 30 years in the business, the news business, I still have this naive notion that when the Washington Post or a legitimate news organization reports something with as much detail and as much backing as has been here, I'm going to believe that. We've come to
sounds like you're just falling for the fake news.
Well, we
John
view this Schwanis. Person, let me just say this, where everything, what we have to say, is that a Republican or a liberal or conservative newspaper? Yes, there are editorial pages that may endorse candidates, right. But if anybody understands legitimate news organizations, if the one, I can tell you, right. If that were Democrat,
John,
they'd be
ask,
just as aggressive.
I want to ask this, though. Again, Todd Rokita, he's running for statewide office here in a few months. Are there going to be some voters who don't like the angle he's taking on this?
Yes, there will be some voters, and maybe a sizable number of voters. People understand the issue. They understand the charges that have been brought by the Washington Post. They're very credible charges, not to mention that the Post has a lot at risk if somebody was going to file a libel lawsuit against them, which hasn't occurred, and there's been no discussion of that. Roy Moore's got a lot of problems, a lot of baggage. He's wrong, and the people who are defending him are going to be sorry that they defended him ultimately.
We saw Luke Messer come out with the qualifier, if the allegations are true, and then a couple days later go, nope, he's got to go. Will we see that from Todd Rokita?
Who knows? He's probably waiting to see what Donald Trump does, because Donald Trump can't make up his mind to denounce him either. It's clear from the volume of complaints that have come forward and the detail on those complaints and the admissions that he made himself about dating teenage girls when he was in his, 30s? I mean, by itself is creepy, okay? And with this level of detail, it is clear that he's unsuited and should not be in the Senate. And he's also demeaned the entire judicial system. How many orders of court has he flouted in his time? He's a disgrace. He ought to be off the ballot.
Why was this not an easier thing for Todd Rokita to just go? I mean, to see the sort of wave of Republicans at every level who just unqualified said, nope, Roy Moore needs to go. Why qualify it?
I haven't talked to Todd about it to get kind of his thought on why, whether he intentionally nuanced it or this was just the way he said it, because the opposite of what he said would be, if it's true, he should stay, which is what a congressman, I guess, in Alabama is still saying, and
that's
nobody
true.
Else believes that, right? So, I mean, how Todd said this is less important to me than the fact that Republicans are almost entirely unified and agreeing that Roy Moore ought to step out. Frankly, I don't know how, from a logistics and kind of a mechanical election law standpoint, that happens.
Not really happens at this point.
But Republicans need to understand how fast this can turn on them and how important it is to pick the right candidates, because Donald Trump won Alabama by 28 points, and now 12 months later they may elect a Democrat U.S. senator.
National Democrats put an Indiana congressional district on a list of targets for next fall's midterm elections.
The Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee says Indiana's 9th congressional district is one of the races it will focus its efforts on leading up to the 2018 election. Freshman Republican Representative Trey Hollingsworth currently represents the Southern Indiana District. He won the race in somewhat controversial fashion. He had only lived in Indiana several months before running, and his campaign was boosted largely by his father's money. There are already a few Democratic candidates lining up in the 9th, including two, attorneys Dan Cannon and Liz Watson, who've each raised more than $200,000.
John Katzenberger, how realistic is the Democrats' shot at the 9th next year?
Well, I think if it's going to happen, it better happen next year. Given the discussion we just had, if they can tag Republicans generally with some of the problems that have happened in a larger sense and those charges stick, I think there's a real opportunity. They're both active. They're both out raising fair amounts of money. A first-termer is always most vulnerable the first time they stand for re-election.
Obviously, we saw what happened in New Jersey and certainly in Virginia earlier this month, and there's Democrats across the country sort of getting their hopes up about that. But those are very different states from Indiana. So it's gotten more red, it seems like, the last few years. But is there a shot in 2018, given historically how midterms in the presidency in the first, year of a presidency goes?
Yeah, I mean, because it's a different turnout in an off-year election and in a presidential election. Now, there was no doubt, if you look back at the 2016 contest, that Donald Trump had, in my eyes, surprisingly long coattails. I mean, he swept a lot of people into office. And these were individuals who, in many cases, had either been on the sidelines of the voting process for a while or maybe had never registered to vote or had never exercised their right. So it seems to me the question is, those people, if they maintain their loyalty,
are they going to come back out again?
Will they come out for other people other than Donald Trump? Maybe they'll come back out if he runs for re-election in 3 years. Yeah. But what about in the interim?
Should Trey Hollingsworth be a little concerned?
I think Congressman Hollingsworth is doing a great job. One, he has worked that district, and he's not stopped working since. He understands that he came in an unconventional way, and he's continued to work. Now, what Democrats have to figure out in the 9th district in particular, because it covers Bloomington and the student population there, is very liberal, right? It tends to be very liberal.
Sure.
Todd Young got 54% of the vote in 2012, a presidential election year. In the off year, he got 63%. And then in the next presidential Trey Hollingsworth got 53% of the vote. So it tightens in the presidential when Democrats, especially young Democrats, actually vote. But they're blowouts in the off years.
Given that it's an off year election, even though historically when you see a Republican president or, the first term of a presidency, is that still a tough place to win in Indiana next year?
Oh, I don't think anybody looks at it as an easy place to win, but you also have, not only is the midterm election of an incumbent on the first term a detriment to the party in power, but you have never had a situation with a president as unpopular as Donald Trump is. Never, since the history of polling for 70 years. And he has been an unmitigated disaster. Tennessee Trey has been in there and, got in there unconventionally, not because of himself, simply because of those coattails. So he is tied to Trump. And he can go the same way Trump goes, which is going to be down the tubes.
Indiana Senate Democrats unveiled their 2018 legislative agenda this week, and it bears a striking resemblance to their agendas the last few sessions.
Of Indiana Senate Democrats' proposals for the upcoming session are a retread, expanded voter access measures, a proposed minimum wage increase, and a push for a bias crimes law. One of the 10 poles of their 2018 agenda, increased voter access, isn't a new idea for the caucus. Members have pushed redistricting reform, expanded voting hours, and same-day registration for years. Some of those ideas have support from key GOP leaders this year, and caucus leader Tim Lannan says that's critical as Republicans outnumber Democrats 41-9 in the Senate.
Redistricting occurs currently.
And Delaney, 41-9. Do Democrats really have any chance of advancing at least one tenet of their agenda?
I think they do, because I think there's a growing recognition in the population that the way that we have conducted elections in this state, it's really amazing. Politicians are like merchants. They're selling themselves to the voters. Republicans have been in control, and they have restricted access to voting. They've made it more difficult. They're the only merchants that I know out there that want to have a smaller group come in and buy their product. Yeah, I think that there's a dawning recognition that the redistricting and the voter suppression has resulted in the kind of impasse that we have in Washington and other places.
The Senate Democrats made the sort of voting expansion efforts the top of their agenda. Is that because you think Republicans are starting to jump on board with at least some of those ideas?
Well, they've said that this summer. So Greg Walker, the chairman, the Republican chairman of the Senate Elections Committee, has already endorsed some of those ideas.
Right.
And so I think those will get a day in the sun and possibly move forward. I think the Senate Democrats are a little bit different. The House is a little more political. The Senate Democrats, if you look at 95-96% of the bills that come through the Senate are bipartisan.
That's true.
And the Senate Democrats have been led by Tim Lantin, have been a good partner with Republicans, and they've actually advanced some things that have been good for all Hoosiers.
That's true. Well, that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and political analyst John Katzenberger. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.